You're listening to KTOO. It's live, local, and time for a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Julie Copins, and on today's program, we'll talk with Peter Metcalf and some vendors from this year's public market. Nurse Cynthia Nickerson will be here with news about diabetes. We'll get an update on Eagle Crest, and Megan Chambers will be here with Arts Up. That, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today on a Juno afternoon. Let's check in with the National Weather Service. It's 25 degrees and cloudy in the capital city, up to 4 inches of new snow by tonight.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. More than half of rural Americans and nearly two-thirds of those living on tribal lands in the U.S. lack high-speed internet access. Some members of Congress from the Southwest want to close the digital divide. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The Rural Broadband Expansion Act would authorize $100 million a year in grants for capacity and equipment upgrades at schools, public safety agencies, and healthcare providers. It would also allow for high-speed web access in some homes and businesses. The funding, if approved, would be authorized annually through 2023. The bill was introduced by New Mexico Democrat Michelle Lujan Grisham and co-sponsored by Arizona Democrat Tom O'Halloran. They say expanding high-speed broadband on rural and tribal lands will boost economies and enhance education, healthcare, and agriculture. According to the most recent data from the Federal Communications Commission, 2.5 million people on tribal lands lack high-speed internet, along with 85% of residents on rural tribal lands. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff, Arizona.
The Bad River Band says it's taking a stand for justice in the shooting death of a teenager on its Wisconsin reservation. As Danielle Kading reports, the tribe is calling for further investigation into the recent incident.
Ashland County Sheriff's Deputy Brock Marjanovic shot and killed 14-year-old Jason Puro earlier this month on the Bad River Band's reservation. Bad River Communications Specialist Nicole Smith says the tribe does not agree with preliminary findings from the Wisconsin Department of Justice.
The Bad River Band requests the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice to open a criminal civil rights and civil police misconduct investigation into an incident of excessive force by the Ashland County Sheriff's Department, particularly force used against a Native American youth.
The Wisconsin Department of Justice says Puro lunged at Marjanovic twice with a butcher knife. The agency says a search of Puro's bedroom showed he was, quote, despondent in the days leading up to the incident. Bad River Smith says the tribe believes the deputy used excessive force.
The tribe would like to take a stand for justice in the tragedy that happened. This is a whole entire community that was affected. I mean, it was, of course, the family, but this has affected everybody. You know, for what happened to this boy, we don't want to see that ever happening again here.
The deputy had been with the Ashland County Sheriff's Office for about a year before the incident. He has been placed on paid administrative leave. The Wisconsin Department of Justice is still investigating the shooting and plans to release its findings within the next month. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
The annual National Day of Mourning is being held in Plymouth, Massachusetts, Thursday. The United American Indians of New England host the gathering to raise awareness of indigenous issues and celebrate Native people instead of the Thanksgiving holiday, which organizers say is a reminder of genocide with the arrival of Europeans. Issues being addressed this year include oil pipelines, fracking, and mining, and their impacts on tribal communities. On the West Coast, Native people gather annually at Alcatraz Island for a sunrise service. The Sunrise event also celebrates Indigenous people. The deadline to file claims under the Cobell settlement is Monday. The Interior Department is taking final steps in efforts to identify the whereabouts of about 17,000 Native Americans for compensation in the settlement. The historic individual Indian trust lawsuit was filed in the 1990s over claims the federal government mishandled trust accounts. In 2009, the case was settled and Congress later passed the settlement of $3.4 billion, which includes money for plaintiffs, a land buyback program, and scholarships. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting heart health. Information on helping prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes at aaip.org/million-hearts. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins. My first guest today in the studio is Peter Metcalf. He's one of the organizers of the Public Market, which is coming up this weekend. I'm sure we're all looking forward to it. Peter, I understand you brought some friends with you, some vendors from this year's market.
That's right. Tamar Harrison from Skagway, she's a new vendor, and Marcy Nelson, who's one of our veteran vendors, she's from Anchorage.
Marcy, Tamar, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hello. So we were chatting a little bit before the program about some of the things you develop and have on offer at the market. First, Peter, tell us, maybe for those who are new to Juno or unfamiliar, what is the Public Market?
Well, it's a holiday retail show that we've initiated back in 1983.
It was
one of the first events in the new Juno Convention Center in Centennial Hall. And then we expanded to the Juno Arts and Culture Center about, almost, 12 years ago, 2005. And then, so we have about 150 vendors. They're from all over Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. And the, in the Centennial Halls where most of the vendors are, 40 vendors in the Jack. There's free admission in the Jack, $7.50 for a weekend pass for the Centennial Hall. And the hours are, we open at noon on Friday, noon to 7 p.m. on Friday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. And the weekend pass, come on back. And I want to make a special announcement, which is we all know how difficult parking can be downtown, but the Subport parking lot is open courtesy of the Juno Heating District facility, which is a project with Keith Constock and Duff Mitchell, and they've generously afforded us the use of that parking lot. It's a chain link fence around it, but there's a bunch of gates, and we just encourage anybody who has any problem parking, use the Subport parking lot.
Okay, and how do I access the lot? From what road?
Well, right here at K2, the intersection at Whittier and Egan.
Okay.
Just cross the intersection, go into the Subport parking or Subport lot. It's right in front of the Coast Guard building, the chain link fence that surrounds the parking lot. And we'll have it plowed and sanded and ready to use.
Super convenient. That is a great option. Good. Okay. Great. So, so ladies, let's maybe start with you, Marcy. You've been at the market before, and we were chatting before the show, and you are from AK Starfish Co., right?
Yeah.
And I'm familiar with your printed sweatshirts and apparel. Maybe tell me a little bit about your company, how it came to be.
Absolutely. I started the company in 2003, and I've got stores now in Homer, Seward, and Anchorage. And this is my 11th year flying into Juno from Anchorage. I come every year with all my dry bags. You'll see me at the airport with mounds of goods coming through. And it's been such a fun part of now my Thanksgiving tradition is to spend it with the families of Juno. So I have my oldest customers, maybe had a onesie back 11 years ago, and they're now in their adult size small hoodies. So that's been so fun to see the same families coming to see me year after year for their traditional stockpiling of the AK Starfish gear.
Right. And I have to commend you because I think you hit the sweet spot because the items themselves, like the sweatshirts and the T-shirts and things, that they're all like soft and good quality.
But
the graphics are really unique. Tell us about those. Where do you get your designs for the prints?
Well, I created the designs over the years. I started with the starfish. I did that design based on a true star in Homer and Sadie Cove. And then I followed my brother as a commercial fisherman. And it's always been an important part of my family upbringing to go fishing. And I wanted to do something to help this sustainable awareness of wild salmon in Alaska. So that was the second design 2 years later. And then after that came the Raven, which, of course, is dear to the southeast. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of folks coming in now to get the hydro flasks with the Raven or all the other products. Yeah, they're great. And then we did the my most recent design is the Mermaid. So we have the Wildflower and the Mermaid as well. So those designs now have started to scatter themselves across not just Alaska, but into, you know, every state in the U.S. and beyond. And we have a brand new website that we're proud of. We just put in a lot of effort with photo shoots and brand new winter collection of gear. So I'm super excited to roll out all the new for Juno.
What's that URL, just while we're thinking about it?
Thank you. akstarfish.com. And we do have a sale going both at the Juno Public Market. So we're doing a 15% off sale throughout the weekend. We're also doing a 15% off sale online. So you guys can go to akstarfish.com or come and visit with me Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, great. And Tamar Harrison, you are from Skagway, correct, but not originally.
No, not originally.
I can tell from your accent.
Just
you're
a
not
from Skagway. So I was born in South Africa, but I grew up in England.
Okay. And you live in Skagway. And
I live in Skagway, built a house in Skagway 4 years ago.
And I got to mention, I've heard about Tamar through the her driftwood whale that's hanging above the Skagway distillery within the
Skagway Spirits opened up this summer, and I had a small eagle in there, like in a 4-foot driftwood sculpture. So that's what I actually do. I make driftwood art and jewelry out of driftwood and silver. So I had a huge sculpture in the distillery, and then that sold. So then I was talking with one of the owners, and we came up with the idea that we really needed to go bigger. So now there's an 11-foot driftwood humpback whale. So he's
He's pretty big. Distillery in Skagway. Okay, well, I have to check it out. But I have seen your work at Annie Kale's here in town.
Yep.
Some of those trees that are made of driftwood.
Yeah, the big trees that are in the windows and the small little ornaments, all made out of driftwood and primarily reclaimed beads. And some have got mammoth ivory in them.
Wonderful. And we were laughing before the program. If anyone's older than me or my age, you remember a Saturday Night Live sketch where one of the Saturday Night Live actors interviewed John Malkovich playing a character who was a driftwood sculptor from the Pacific Northwest. And the questions were a little ridiculous, such as, where do you find your driftwood?
At which point I say, oh, it just drifts in.
It just drifts in. So people actually ask you that question. That's like, Juno, what's the sea level here? Funny. Okay. Well, so when you walk the beach, you're a kid in a candy store.
I do have a bit of an issue. That and a lot of my friends also like to find cool pieces, and they just leave them on my deck and in the gardens. I mean, there really is just mountains of driftwood in my house. It's pretty amazing.
So this weekend, we will have to take some of that off your hands.
Please do.
Add it to our stash
of
treasure.
Yeah, tiny ornaments up to really big sculptures. So.
Wonderful. Okay. So in addition to some of these original artworks and the printed apparel, Peter, what else can we expect at the public market?
Well, if you haven't been to the public market in a couple of years, probably about 60% of the vendors will be entirely new.
Wow.
We have a regular rotation of vendors, and this year we have 34 vendors who've never shown before and about a total of 46 who weren't here for the last couple of years. A couple of vendors haven't been here for 10 or 12 years are coming back. So it's fun to see people like Diane Sheridan of Anchorage, who does leather goods, and she hasn't been here since about 2013 or so, but she's back and a very pleasant person. And then we got Zach La Perriere is how he pronounces his name. He's from Sitka, and he does these beautiful, beautiful bowls that he harvests the wood. It's sustainable harvest. It's like fallen dead timber. And the ones that really interest me are the spalted red alder bowls. And spalted is where it's just beginning to decompose and gets color, and you get it at just right time, and it's good hardwood. But let it sit much longer, and it's just rotted timber.
So he treats it in a way that retards the decomposition? Or?
Well, I think he catches
Can
it before it decomposes.
No, I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
Anyway, one of the cool things about the public market is you get to meet the artists like Tamar Harrison and who maybe sell some of their product here, Marcy Nelson. Maybe you can get it online, but here's your chance to meet them in person And
ask dumb questions like, can I put this in the microwave?
Right. Or where do you get your driftwood?
Where do you get your driftwood?
Another stupid tourist question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Everyone's going to ask you that now tomorrow.
I'm going to come up with a lot of different answers.
Yes. I think that would be a fun writing exercise. Okay. So, Peter, you mentioned people can buy a weekend pass for all 3 days, and that would seem like a really smart strategy because I know I usually do one pass through without buying anything. I have to, exercise a lot of discipline, but I don't get out my money until I've been all the way through. And then I go back and I start buying. So what do you hear from other people who have sort of plans of attack? How do we make the market work for us?
Well, there's some people who want to be there right off the bat, and which is fine. People are lining up to get in at noon on Friday,
Friday
at noon. And most of these vendors, like the two women present, they know what they're doing. They've been in plenty of inventory, so. I would recommend going through and taking mental notes and then coming back and being relaxed about it because sometimes it's really crowded. There's no doubt about that, the first couple hours on Friday especially. But later Friday afternoon, it gets pretty mellow. And, in fact, I want to mention we're going to have the Juno Cello Choir, 4 p.m.
Oh, nice.
On Friday afternoon.
That is civilized shopping, Peter. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I love that. It's just really a highlight for me. And then we have occasionally, pop-up choirs and that sort of thing. And it's just a fun event. And the thing that I like about it, one of the many things, is this is a huge event. Lots and lots of people. But I don't think there's one where people are more pleasant.
Hmm.
It's just a holiday spirit and everybody's happy to see each other. And so
yes.
It's really a fun event.
Well, we all have to be nice because is there someone else there who might be keeping
Samantha
an eye on
us? Samantha
will
be there taking notes on 11 o'clock on Sunday morning and bring all the kids. Vendors very generously offer presents for the kids. We've gotten into this thing where Santa gives a present to every child he talks to, and sometimes they're adult-appropriate presents for the little toddlers who don't know what the heck they're being handed.
Right. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah,
okay. Great. Well, we will look forward to that. Okay. Artists, ladies, any other tips from the – you are insiders. You know how to work these shows. Any shopping tips for us civilians?
For years, I've had – this is Marcy with AK Starfish. For years, my booth is two doors down from the Audubon Society, and they always bring these beautiful jellies. And literally, I see people streaking across the Sheffield Ballroom – in a mad dash to go get the lingonberry jelly because it sells out quickly.
Yeah.
So
I didn't get any
jelly. Yeah, exactly.
I had to settle for, blueberry or something.
That seems to be the one thing that sells out quickly, so you might want to go get your jelly on.
The Audubon Doorbusters. Okay. Tamar, any tips?
I'm a newbie. I'm right there learning what to do. So.
Okay. You have to keep your stamina up. I guess stay hydrated, ladies. It's a marathon.
Good. I'm going to bring a bottle of snacks.
Okay.
Chocolate.
So let's get the days and hours and one more time, make sure everyone knows where to go and when.
We open at noon on Friday, noon to 7 p.m. Don't forget there's plenty of parking courtesy of the subport. The Juno District Heating Facility has offered that space, and there's probably 2 acres of parking.
Great.
That has been closed down for about 4 years now, so we're really happy to see that back. And then on Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., And don't forget the Juno Arts and Culture Facility because there's another 40 vendors there, and it's really a mixed lot there. There's some new vendors, veteran vendors, and just offering a wide variety of things. So if there's a line at getting into the Centennial Hall, walk over to the Jack.
Right. And aren't there refreshments at both locations? Snacks and drinks for
sale? There's a food court in Centennial Hall, but we don't have food in the Jack, although there's popcorn and a few things that are offered, drinks that are offered by the Jack staff. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that. But the food court in Centennial Hall is, there's guys coming along with their spouses who are maybe not that interested, and they can sit it out and gab with their neighbors at the food court.
You don't want to shop, you can eat.
Yes.
Sounds like a weekend. Excellent. Well, thank you all three for coming
in. Thanks so much for having us.
Good luck this weekend. Happy shopping.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, November the 22nd, 2017. President John F. Kennedy was assassinated on this date in 1963 in a limousine riding through Dallas, Texas, 10-mile route that would take him and his wife to the Trade Mart, where he was to speak at a luncheon as the car drove through Dealey Plaza. Lee Harvey Oswald opened fire from a sixth-floor window in the Texas Schoolbook Depository, and the president was pronounced dead at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's the birthday of Charles de Gaulle, born in Lille, France, in 1890, president of France from 1959 to 69, a brigadier general in 1940. He was in London when France was taken over by the Germans, and he gave an impassioned speech on British radio. Whatever happens, the flame of French resistance must not and shall not die, and thereby became the leader of the Free French Force, which became the fourth largest Allied army in Europe by the end of the war, and which liberated Paris. It was Charles de Gaulle who once said, "How can you govern a country that has 246 varieties of cheese?" It's the birthday of the author best known by her pen name, George Eliot. She was born Mary Ann Evans, 1819, in Warwickshire, England, author of Adam Bede, Milan the Floss, Silas Marner, and her masterpiece, Middlemarch, a woman who took a male pen name for the very simple reason that she wanted her books to be taken seriously. Henry James was a friend of hers and once described her as magnificently, awe-inspiringly ugly. And it's the birthday of the songwriter Hoagie Carmichael, born 1899, Bloomington, Indiana, went to Indiana University, went off to Hollywood, wrote for movies, appeared in many of them, and in 1929, on a visit to his alma mater, Indiana University, thinking back to an old girlfriend, he wrote his big hit song, Stardust. Here's a poem for today by Patricia Farnioli, Winter Grace. If you have seen the snow under the lamppost piled up like a white beaver hat on the picnic table, or somewhere slowly falling into the brook to be swallowed by water, then you have seen beauty and know it for its transience. And if you have gone out in the snow for only the pleasure of walking, barely protected from the galaxies, the flakes settling on your parka, like the dust from just-born stars, the cold waking you as if from long sleeping, then you can understand how more often than not truth is found in silence, how the natural world comes to you if you go out to meet it, its icy ditches filled with dead weeds, its vacant birdhouses and dens full of the sleeping. But this is the slowed-down season, held fast by darkness, and if no one comes to keep you company, then keep watch over your own solitude. In that stillness, you will learn with your whole body the significance of cold and the night, which is otherwise always eluding you. Winter Grace, a poem by Patricia Farnioli from her collection Hallowed, published by Tupelo Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The tobacco industry has led people to believe chewing tobacco is safe.
They market their products to look like gum and mints and promote them in activities like baseball and hunting. The truth is, smokeless tobacco is addictive and causes oral, stomach, and pancreatic cancers. Don't be tricked by the tobacco industry. For free support quitting, call Alaska's Tobacco Quitline at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
Ready or not, it's back again. The KTOO Used Media Sale and the Pop-Up Record Shop have teamed to offer more vinyl than the capital city has ever cared to see. It all happens on December 8th and 9th, and you can be a part of it. Friday night, the 8th, at the Amalga Distillery, Annie B. has amassed dozens of collectible LPs, followed on Saturday the 9th from 9 a.m. to noon with even more LPs, CDs, and DVDs. If you'd like to clean out your collection and donate your used media to the sale, you're invited to bring it by KTOO beginning Monday, December 4th. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins here in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown, and now joined by Megan Chambers from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Juno Arts and Culture Center. Megan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So normally with Arts Up, we have Nancy DeCherney here in this chair. Tell us about yourself. How long have you been with the Jack, Megan?
Oh, my gosh, my mind went blank. 4 years.
I'm trying to block it out.
Never.
Feels like a lifetime.
Never.
4 years.
Yeah,
okay.
This is my fourth winter.
And
I actually count it in wearable arts, if that makes any sense.
Yes, that makes
I started
sense.
Right before wearable art, 1 year.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, how many wearable arts?
Trial by fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I look forward to talking about wearable arts with you sometime soon. But for right now, Arts Up. So tell us about some of the things that are going on. We just had a conversation with the folks from the public market, the three-day sale going on, Centennial Hall and the Jack. Got that covered. What else? What are other options for entertainment and culture this weekend?
Well, I will start with a prompt 9 a.m. event start time on Thursday.
Oh, my gosh.
Thanksgiving. So before you eat the turkey, you can do the annual turkey trot. And that's a 5K, 1 mile run walk. And it starts at the Mendenhall Refuge Trail Access Road. And it's about $15 to $20 a race. And it benefits the Juno Teens for Change and JD High School Hockey.
Great cause.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try to get motivated.
Yep.
And that's warm. And
fourth annual one.
Fourth. Okay.
And then you can eat as much turkey as you want, which that's I will probably do anyway.
I know.
I'll run from my bedroom to the oven back and forth many times. That'll be my 5K. And then, can I skip to Friday?
Sure.
Because that's when most of the things start. We all take a little break. We just stay at our
right,
houses.
We just digest, okay,
yep.
And then Friday.
And then Deals and Donuts is a great way to get downtown early and hit up some of your other wonderful local shopping options. It's sponsored by the Downtown Business Association, which is a nonprofit and helps advocate for all the local businesses here.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be donuts. There will be deals. You can hit up those guys and then go to Public Market, which starts at noon, of course,
perfect,
on Friday. Yeah. Other than that, all week there's a Christmas tree and wreath sale. So if you haven't gotten your greenery yet, consider doing that at Fred Meyer's, and it's all weekend. And then,
do you know who's running that or what that benefits, that sale?
Yes, I do. Thanks for asking. I'm, like, frantically reading as I talk. The Juno and Thunder Mountain High School swim and dive teams.
Oh, swim and dive teams.
Yep.
Okay, good for those guys. All right, we'll go get our wreaths and trees. Fred Meyer.
There is a Thanksgiving Friday barn dance at St. Anne's Parish Hall. So it's a traditional barn dance. And Odette Edgar will be teaching calling and contra dancing. And there's a full circle string band playing.
Oh, fun. I love those guys.
Yeah, that's 7:30 on Friday.
Another good way to burn off some calories. Contra dancing.
Exactly.
Right?
And then you can keep burning more calories. There's a theme here.
Okay.
I'm feeling, like, very guilty.
Are you trying to tell us something?
I don't know.
Okay.
Julie and Jeff look great, by the way. True. But you can skate with Santa and his merry elves at Treadwell Arena, and that is free from 7:45 to 9 on Friday.
On Friday night?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fun. Okay, that sounds great.
Now I have no excuse to get out on Friday.
Yes.
Saturday, of course, is public market and resale, and it looks like that's mostly going on. And then Sunday is a bit of the same thing. So do your shopping.
Right.
Support local businesses. Recover from Thursday.
Very good. And maybe start planning for, because it seems like after Thanksgiving weekend, then the following weekend, the weekend, then we get the huge avalanche of holiday concerts,
yes,
Nutcracker, all of that. So time to kind of get your calendar in order.
Yeah, check the community calendar. The list I read off we make from the community calendar,
mm-hmm,
and that's right on our homepage on our website, jahc.org,
mm-hmm,
and KTOO also has it on their website.
Okay, so
KTOO.
You can go on the community calendar and click on each day, and
mm-hmm,
there's all the details you need to know.
And next week, believe it or not, is Gallery Walk.
Oh, that's right.
Not
first
this weekend,
Friday,
but next weekend.
Okay.
Yep. That's the big gallery walk. So I'm sure we will have a whole slew of things to talk about that week. But,
mm-hmm,
of course, if you've been here for many years, you know it's one of the biggest First Fridays. They block off Front Street.
Mm-hmm.
There's music downtown. There's lights. It's really fun. People stay open pretty late. Yeah, it's busy.
I remember that last year. It was such a delight. And it just happened to be one of those, there was snow on the ground, but it was nice, and it was
so
festive. People were out. It was like you walked into a Norman Rockwell painting, and you're shopping in downtown Juneau. What
and
can be better?
I make the list, the little gallery flyers, or the gallery walk flyers, and write the PSA for First Friday, and I can tell you from experience, the number of events happening for the December one, like, triple.
Right.
So there's lots to do. Most of it is downtown, but there's lots of other businesses headed towards the flats or even in the valley that will have openings too. So,
And I was thinking this the other day. I saw you at the box office at the Jack selling tickets to someone. And do you have any tips for people who feel kind of overwhelmed by sometimes the volume of events in a weekend? How do you make your decision on what to do? You can't be in 10 places at once.
That's a great question. I try to spread the love, and I'll make sure I go to at least one dance performance, one theater performance, and one musical performance at least, I'd say, half year.
Right.
If I can do it per month, then great.
Right.
But if not, and often I am working events, so I can't always go.
Right.
But if you are feeling overwhelmed with purchasing tickets, then all of these, most events in Juneau are nonprofits, or maybe your friend is running it and it's happening at a bar or restaurant, but I'm sure they need help. And so volunteering is a really great way to attend the event, and you don't have to pay, but you can provide some resources for those organizations that need a little extra staff.
And as a side benefit, connect with other people who share your interests.
Exactly.
And friends.
Yeah, exactly. Great way to meet new people and to learn a lot more about the organization itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because frequently these events are fundraisers and it's benefiting programming.
Right.
Like for the Jack, Wearable Arts benefits our student scholarships and our individual artist grants and helps us keep the Jack open all year long.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing to keep in mind because, you know, we're all going to be shopping in the public market. Santa, at some point, gets empty pockets, and we can't always buy tickets that we want to do. So, so go to the organization's website, give them a call, say, are you looking for ushers? Do you need help with programs? Or how can I volunteer? That's a great strategy.
And if you're shopping and you're trying hard to find, this is kind of a turnaround from volunteering, but if you're trying to find a gift for someone that has everything, like my dad, the man who has everything, that's in capital letters, you could get a Jack gift certificate, and that is money that you can spend on tickets, on Jack Lobby Shop stuff, but I love to get him that because then he can go to events.
Right.
It's like his tickets are already prepaid.
And you don't need to worry about the calendar or anything?
Nope.
It's up to the recipient when they spend
that? They just have to go in and use it.
Great idea. And also making donations to an arts group or a cultural organization in the name of someone is another nice holiday gift.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, great. All right, well, Megan, thank you so much for sharing some of this weekend's events. And once again, where do I go to get the lowdown on all of these cool happenings?
JAHC.org, or you can call us at 586-2787, and we're happy to tell you what's going on over the phone, too.
Okay, we'll see you out around town. Thanks, Megan.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Bird Note. Birds brighten our lives. We find joy in their songs, inspiration in their soaring flight. They connect us with nature. But sometimes, birds connect us a bit too directly with nature. Park under the wrong tree, one where a flock of starlings or grackles comes to roost, and nature may be painted in white on your car so thickly that it takes a trip or two through the car wash just to see through the windshield again. Aside from helping you decide where not to park next time, this messy event raises a scientific question. Why is most of the bird poop we see white? The answer lies in the fact that birds, unlike mammals, don't produce urine. Instead, they excrete nitrogenous wastes in the form of uric acid, which emerges as a white paste. And uric acid doesn't dissolve in water easily. Hence, its ability to stick to your windshield like blobs of white plaster. It appears that drivers of some cars might be asking for trouble. A study in England found that red cars are most likely to be the target of bird droppings, followed by blue and black. Green was the least likely. So be careful where you park, and give that red Mustang a wide berth. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note comes from Songbird Coffee, offering bird-friendly, organic, shade-grown coffee for holiday giving. More at birdnote.org/songbird.
Are you retired from the state of Alaska? Did you previously participate in the state's SHARE campaign in support of United Way and its partner agencies? Now that you're retired and not able to participate in the SHARE campaign, there's still a way to continue your support of United Way and their partner agencies. Visit UnitedWaySeak.org, click on Donate, and sign up for an automatic monthly contribution. Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. This message brought to you by the United Way.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined now in the studio by Jeffra Clow. She is Sales and Marketing Director and Director of the Sports School up at Eagle Crest Ski Area. Welcome to the program, Jeffra.
Great. Thanks for having me in the show this afternoon, Julie.
Okay. First big question, when will things start running up there?
Well, we're looking pretty good for our scheduled December 2nd opening. So that's Saturday, December 2nd. We've been making snow for probably about the last week to 10 days on the Porcupine area. Then we've moved up to the Hooter area. So they're still making snow up there today. Mother Nature has helped supplement a little bit of that today. It was snowing up there on the mountain, and then we've gotten about 3 inches of snow since Monday on the mountain, so, and more in the forecast. So we're working hard. Mother Nature is helping us a little bit. We're hoping Mother Nature can help us a little bit more, but we feel like we're on track for something to open on December 2nd.
That's great. And in particular, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the ski school, winter sports education programs you have going on up there?
Absolutely. So we are, you know, we love to play in the winter up on the mountain. Mm-hmm. And so for one of the things that we do is make sure that we have offerings for everyone that wants to come up and join us on the mountain. So we have lessons for all ability levels of alpine skiing, snowboarding, Nordic skiing, and adaptive skiing. And we're going to start those out as soon as we open, especially if we just open the Porcupine area. It'll be the great opportunity to start the season out right and learn a new snow sport and get up and get going.
Well, I'm glad you're starting that way because I have a 12-year-old, of course, total hot dog skier, way better than I am now, has eclipsed mom seasons ago, but has a little bit of an attitude about Porcupine, like, oh, I don't want to go on Porcupine, I'm so beyond it. But I think on the first day, really smart to start slow, get back into things, get your sea legs, so to speak, and, warm up.
Yeah, that's what I always tell everybody is, you know, it's been a long summer, mm-hmm. and even though that you think that you're still going to remember everything from last spring, Porcupine Learning Area is a great opportunity to get those ski or snowboard legs underneath you, get a few lift rides, get those skiing muscles going back and going and make some turns and get ready to move up on the mountain.
And so, to make sure your gear is in good shape.
Yes.
So what kind of services do you offer on the mountain to make sure that we're well equipped?
So our repair shop is open. It's regular hours now, Thursday through Monday. However, I do want to add everything will be closed tomorrow for Thanksgiving.
Right.
But so we can test and adjust your bindings, make sure that they're set properly, safely, so that you're not going to get injured. Wax your equipment. It's always a good idea to get it waxed frequently because it'll actually doesn't just make you go faster, but it helps it slide on the snow easier.
Hmm.
And then if you've got new gear, then you need to get those bindings mounted or looking to see if you've got the right gear, you can always stop in the shop and talk to Ben and the gang, and they can help you out. And you
mm-hmm.
can find more information on that at skijuno.com.
Okay, and that's also the place to go to get conditions on the mountain, updates as far as operations, which lists will be running,
yep.
which
uh-huh.
runs will be open.
Yep, conditions are on the mountain. We've started to update the weather a little bit. Our webcams, we have 7 new webcams up and going, so you can go and kind of check out.
Okay, wait,
see
does that mean if I do a spectacular wipeout, it's going to be blasted all over the internet?
It could be, Julie. It just depends upon the timing of it.
Okay.
But we're really excited by our new webcams. Nate's worked hard to get those up and going, and there are a variety of places around the mountain. I just checked them, and the snow guns are blasting some pretty good snow out right now, so that is great. So, yep, you can find everything Eagle Crest at SkiJuno.com.
SkiJuno.com. Okay. I wanted to ask about a couple of areas that I have particular interest in. One is Nordic skiing, and it seems like in the past few seasons, the interest in Nordic or cross-country skiing, some of us call it, has really, you know, risen, and a lot of options. So tell us kind of what are some plans for trails for those who want to ski under their own power.
Okay. Oh, yes. So Nordic skiing. We have our Lower Nordic trails, which don't have a lot of snow on them right now. We need Mother Nature to help us with those. But once we get those up and going, we do have lessons for all ability levels for Nordic, both classic and skate skiing. And if you want to try, like, Nordic classic skiing, which is the more traditional Nordic skiing, we also have classic rentals. So
that's
you
great.
Can get into that sport.
Give it a try. Okay.
Give it a try. I know that we're going to have the Nordic race program race schedule posted on our website soon. I just saw an email come through on that confirming that. So there's going to be a lot of exciting things happening in the Nordic world as well this year. So check out SkiJuno.com.
That's great. One thing I noticed, so I mentioned my 12-year-old hot dog alpine skier. We have a system now where we both go up to the mountain. I do Nordic skiing, which is more my speed at age 46, and he does the downhill, and then we meet up for lunch, have some French fries in the lunchroom, and it's a great way for families, for everyone to have fun and feel safe and do what is their speed.
And that's the great thing, Julie, that I love about skiing and snowboarding is it is family.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it as a family. You can do it together. You can do it separately.
Meet up with friends.
Meet up, have lunch, meet up for coffee at Mountain Lift, and have that shared experience. And it's always fun to share the experiences and, you know, then go out and make a run together or just sit and talk about it over French fries and hot chocolate.
Great. And I love that the experience is accessible to people of all abilities, too. Tell me a little bit about the adaptive program and what kinds of populations you're able to serve with that.
So we work very closely with Sail Orca program, and we are able to offer lessons for all ability levels of bi-ski, mono-ski, three-track, four-track, cognitive disabilities. So we have made sure that the mountain is accessible to everyone. And so if you do have a physical disability and you're thinking, you know what, I want to try skiing, don't think that you can't do it, because we can have the skills, the tools, the knowledge, and the experience to get you turning on the mountain as well.
I love that. And what do those of us who are, quote, able-bodied, who are out in the mountain, what do we need to be aware of maybe when we see a group of folks using some of the adaptive equipment?
I think it's the same thing as anywhere. Just be aware where you are, your space on the mountain, what your speed is. Be alert to what everybody else is doing. Follow the skier's responsibility code. And just make sure you know that you know your limitations, you know the terrain and the snow conditions that you're skiing on or snowboarding on, and that you are not stopped in a blind spot or, you know, taking off on a jump and not sure what's going on the other side.
So the same skier responsibilities, common courtesy apply across the board.
Yep, they sure do.
Good. I guess this is a good time to be reminded of all of that, too, as we head into a new season. I imagine this time of year, you know, for all of you up at the mountain, is it a little bit like, I don't know, I'm in theater, so is it like tech week, you know, opening night is coming? What's the mood on the mountain?
Oh, it's excited, it's busy, you know, we have new staff coming on, we've got, you know, whiteboards full of to-do lists to keep marking everything off, and it's a crazy time, but it's an excited time, because all of us, we want to get the mountain open, and that's what we're doing right now, is working to make sure that we can get that mountain open on December 2nd.
All right, you're like Santa's elves.
Yes, we are. We're working hard.
Well, I hope Mother Nature, as you say, gives you a hand with some more snow. Look forward to being up on the mountain. Thank you so much for coming in, Jeffra, and have a great season.
Thanks for joining us and or having me in here. And you can find SkiJuno.com, and we just want to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving.
Wonderful. We'll see you on December 2nd.
This is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups have adopted specific weeks during which they are doing something special to help spread kindness. This week's group is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Protected Resources Division. You can send stories and pictures of your own kindness experiences to 17YOK@JunoPolice.com. Together, we can make Juno a better place to live.
Join Mark Everett and Sarah Everett this Thanksgiving on KRNN's Cross Currents for a special holiday listening event. We will be showcasing the best of the crooner generation, Alice's Restaurant, and at the same time be giving you all live tips and tricks to all your busy Thanksgiving meal preparation. Tune in from 8 to 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 23rd, to hear great programming just for you on Thanksgiving Day. Be careful not to burn the bird!
We're back at a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Up next, you're going to be hearing a selection from November's Mudrooms program. This is the great storytelling program they do out at Northern Light Church. You'll hear Guy Archibald do a little bit of storytelling. And this is a teaser. On Thursday, tomorrow at 7 p.m., you'll be able to hear the whole program. There will be a broadcast of November's Mudrooms as part of our Thanksgiving lineup. So enjoy this little teaser.
Our next one is Guy Archibald. Guy Archibald is a mountain boy originally from Colorado. He thinks life is one big experiment. You don't know until you give it a try. So try everything.
So I used to work at a mine way out in the desert of southeastern Utah. Beautiful country, red slip rock, canyons, sage, pinyon pines. And we'd work a schedule of 10 days working and then 4 days off. But there really wasn't anything to do on your 4 days off. The nearest anything was a one-building town 81 miles away called Fry Canyon. But from the mine camp off on the horizon, I could see this large ridge that stuck up. It looked like a clenched fist. And I knew that Lake Powell was just on the other side of that ridge. So I made up my mind, such as it was, that I was going to hike there sometime. Now, to go back a little, for many years I was a member of a mountain search and rescue team. And they drill into your head the two rules of going into the wilderness. First of all, you tell somebody where you're going and when you're going to come back. And second of all, you bring some essentials in case you end up out there longer than you planned. And we had to drill that into a lot of other people's heads. So one day, I set off across the desert towards my clenched fist. No matches, no food, no water, and I hadn't told a soul. So I walking across basically this big plateau, beautiful desert. I go a few miles, and I come across this big chasm in front of me, this huge crevasse in the earth. It's hundreds of feet deep, 100 feet wide or so. And right where I intersected it, there was a ledge down below, about 15-foot drop below, a big ledge with some pinions growing on it and yuccas and greasewood. And I couldn't see over the edge. Looked like if I could get down, I could climb out the other side, continue on my way. So I walked up the canyon about a mile, and I'm looking and looking. Nope, no way down. I come back to the same spot, and no, I still can't see over the edge. So I walk down the canyon about a mile, looking and looking. Nope, can't find a way down. So I came back to that spot, and I decided I'll just jump down there. Look over the edge. So I did. Jumped down there, landed in the soft sand. I walked over to the edge and I looked down. Nope. And then I looked behind me. Uh-oh. Now I know what a spider feels like in a bathtub. In the parlance of the desert, it's called being potholed. So now I get to entertain myself by cycling through the five stages of grief here. So first there's denial. I'm not stuck. I'm going to get out of here. So I'd get back as far as I could, and I would run, and I would leap, and I'd throw myself against the rock, and I'd claw and scramble and scratch like a cat being suspended over water. And every time I'd slide down and land in a heap, a little bit softer piece of meat every time. And I did this over and over again. And then there was anger. Man, And then there's bargaining. Please, God. Oh, Lord, I promise I'll be a good, oh, maybe a better person if you just get me out. And then there's depression. Let's see what's going to get me first. Dehydration, starvation, exposure. And then, of course, acceptance. Someday, somebody's going to come along this lonely spot and they're going to look down there. And here's a skeleton with some tattered remains of clothing leaning up against the rock. And I cycled through this for the next 7-8 hours, spending a little more time on one or the other. Became very good at them all. Obviously, I got off the ledge. And the way I did it was, there was a little pinyon pine about 10 feet tall next to the rock, and I climbed up in the top of that thing, and I'd start swinging it back and forth and back and forth, and at the right moment, I'd throw myself out of the tree and onto the rock, and I'd scramble and scratch, and I'd come down, and I'd land in a big wad in between the tree and the rock, and I did this over and over again, fueled by just increasing desperation. Finally, I got just enough of a toehold where I could scramble up. I got just enough friction where I could take that one step necessary to climb off of this ledge and get out of this whole pothole. Sometimes listening is not enough. And as I'm dragging my now tenderized body back across the desert, it dawns on me that if we as humans actually listened to people, if we actually learned from others' experience and did not have to repeat the same mistakes, we would have colonized the universe by now. But if that collective we is represented by me, the universe is a very lucky place.
That was Guy Archibald telling a story from this November's Mud Rooms. You can hear the whole program tomorrow night at 7, part of our special Thanksgiving lineup. On Friday, a Juno afternoon, we'll be back with host Andy Klein. I'm Julie Copins, here with Jeff Brown, wishing you a very happy Thanksgiving.